Normal. Greenfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at greenfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's November the 18th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. He's sitting in for our regular Friday afternoon analyst from that office, Mike Zuzulo. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. In agricultural news, the GAO says USDA insurance programs are not properly screened for fraud. Some on the Hill hope to slip mandatory cool into other legislation. And the U.S. will soon have a new top trade negotiator for agriculture. I'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And today, we'll hear a quick survey of the December meetings lineup from University of Illinois Extension. We'll have something for grain and livestock producers. It all happens on this Friday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this in the wheat pit. December wheat settled at 302, down 2¾ on the Friday. Now the March contract at 317¾, off 3¼. December corn futures at $1.91¼, off 1 for the day. The March futures at 205¼, and they were a penny and a quarter lower for the day. March contract 205¼, as I said, down a penny and a quarter. The May futures at 213¼ were off 1¾. December contract at 240¾, off a half. January soybeans at 569¾ were down 9½ cents today. The March futures at 577¼ were down 9½. And the May soybeans at 582¾ were down 9¼. November soybeans $5.95, off 8 cents. December bean meal 172.20, down 2.60. December bean oil at 22.01, down 15. From the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle finished at 113.60. They were down 25 for the day. December live cattle at 92.02½. were down 20 cents. December lean hogs at the Merc at $62.62½ were up 52½ cents for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Chuck.
Nice to be here, Todd. Nice to be out of the combine seat and back in a little softer seat that doesn't bounce around so much.
I bet it is. Let's talk about this cattle on feed report that was released just a few minutes ago from USDA. The numbers read like this: on feed as of November 1st at 101%, the range at 99.2 to 101.7. Placed in October for the cattle at 103, average trade guess 100%, and the marketed in October at 97%, the average trade guess at 96.7. Your early estimate of what that means on Monday morning's trade?
Early calls were looking at 20 or 50 lower, and especially with cattle at such high levels, Todd, I think all these numbers could be looked at as pretty negative to the cattle trade.
And let's go into these numbers just a bit more, because it tells something about what's been happening in the grain trade, I think, as well. For instance, the marketed in October at 97% of last year. Is that simply because guys are keeping them on the cheap feed to get them fatter?
Yeah, this corn market with the corn plentiful piles all over the country, and I think it's pretty obvious guys look at those nice high cattle prices and think, well, you know, if I can push a little more corn into those cattle and hold them back, I'm going to get some more money out of them, and we see that in those numbers for sure.
And the placed would be for the same reason. In particular, the corn is cheap, and they're looking at high-priced cattle, and they're capable, I think, of reaping quite a few dollars out of them in the future.
Yeah, it's good money to feed them out, and I think that the thing that happens, too, well, people's heifers that they were going to retain, I think they're probably going back into the lot there, looking at some nice profit there on feeding them out.
Any fear that the bubble will burst?
I think one thing we can get into in the grains a little bit, but the people dying from bird flu, there's some ideas out there that if you're not going to eat the poultry, we saw consumption in poultry go down in the last month or two, that pork and beef will be substitutes that probably can come in and take some of that slack up if people are not going to eat as much chicken out there.
We know historically that pork will replace chicken, but beef is a little just a bit of a tougher pull simply because it's a high-end premium product. Do you have an idea in the back of your mind how much beef might move up because of bird flu?
Well, I think that, you know, in a country like China, pork would be an easy fit, but Italy, for example, their consumption of poultry has dropped about 50% in the last month or two. So there are countries out there that do have a decent amount of income and money that might shift some of that demand over to the beef. So a little bit unique situation. You know, in past history, you might say, well, poultry goes, that they won't afford the beef. But I think possibly we might be able to find some of these countries that do have good incomes that might pick up the slack on the beef market.
Let's switch from the Mercantile Exchange to the Chicago Board of Trade, where this week, December, corn had a high for the week at $1.99.5, their new low for the contract at $1.90.75. That was set today. And their settlement price at $1.91.25, down 4.25 cents. Technically speaking, this looks like a pretty decisive outside down week. What does it mean for the futures?
So we look at some of the monthly charts in corn today, and it looks like on a monthly chart, the 175 or 180 area would be the next target. I think, again, all this goes back to before bird flu death came about, I thought the market was in an opportunity to get something going to the upside of post-harvest rally, but it's just put the market on a defensive mode. And technically, you know, 175 or 80 looks like a target that we may shoot for in a monthly chart now.
That seems it seems almost, I suppose, unfathomable to many farmers who are like you, sitting now in a more comfortable chair as opposed to harvesting their crop. And usually there is a little pop as we go through December. Can we dismiss that at this point?
Well, what's happened, what we've seen and checked out today, is the basis is still pretty firm. And if guys would look out there and check with their elevators, maybe a December or next February, March delivery time frame, the basis has improved significantly, both in corn and beans, and they're coming after some grain here, and they do want to buy that, I think, in this December time frame. So I think maybe we have to look for, towards the basis and maybe have to kind of disregard these futures prices because of the bird flu death.
Let's go ahead and do that, because it's been the cash market that seems to be in the driver's seat all fall long. First we had Katrina that started messing things up in the futures in the cash market. Got unhooked just a bit, and we heard a couple of weeks ago about John in the Memphis area. John Bondurant was telling us how the market had moved in 6 weeks. I don't know, 50 or 60 cents to the upside, just because it's a local basis there. I took a look at LDP this afternoon, Indiana, 34 or 36 cents, depending on which county you're in. I think Illinois was all at 34, and Iowa still at 40 cents. So it seems to me that the cash basis, the local basis that you're looking at, is really where farmers, even if they're trying to market further out, have to not look at the futures market, but to look at their cash market more thoroughly than maybe we have here on this program. How do you go about doing that?
Well, I think you got to look at it twofold. As you just said, the LDP guys who probably took it, most guys probably did, you probably have gained maybe 15 cents there. The basis from the harvest glut is probably 15 to 20 cents better there. So you add those two together, Todd, you're going to make a significant gain there with some, you know, decent yields on corn. So I think guys need to look at, we need to go ahead and add those two together, check around your different elevators, get some different bids, see who's offering you the best price for when you want to sell, and say, I'm going to add those two together and go ahead and make my sales and be done. And there's some really cheap options out there I talked to guys about, that if you want to re-own this crop, put your money out there for 5 cents or 7 cents and see what happens. Maybe all this bird flu will settle down and maybe we can get some exports going and get some better prices down the road.
And then on the bird flu subject, we can switch over to the soy complex, which is where bird flu tends to have more of an impact simply because of the bean meal needs of the poultry flocks overseas. What can you expect there?
Well, I think we got to go look at the technicals. The January contract back in September and October, that 565 to 566 area is critical. If we take that out next week, you really don't have anything underneath there but air. Pretty wide open for a significant drop. Again, the basis is fairly good right now. The processors I talked to today are looking to buy some beans between now and Christmas, but after the first of the year and looking further down the road, they see information like, again, the Italians eating less chicken. It's a fact that's going to affect meal demand. So pretty critical there next week that we don't take out 565, 566.
What do we need to watch in terms of avian flu and its move to humans and the way it might impact the market? For instance, in China, they had, two, maybe three that were confirmed this week with avian flu or bird flu in the human population. If we see that number rise in any dramatic way, where it's 20 or 30 or 100 or 300, does that have a large impact, and can we see 50-cent move days?
Well, Todd, we've already seen some Internet sites that were told to us by some of the traders that say there's more deaths than just the two or three that we're hearing on the major news media. I think the other thing we could say about this, once the genie's out of the bottle, people have died. We can't put that back in. So I think the market's always going to be aware of that throughout the course of the whole winter. Their attitude is going to be, this is probably going to get worse till proven that it's not, rather than as farmers we hope that, you know, well, this is an isolated incident and it'll go away. And I think the market's proven to us here that more than likely it's not going to go away, and we got to be more concerned about proving people are going to stop dying rather than, you know, is it two or three, 300.
What's the most often question asked you on the bean market today?
Well, I think it goes back to what, in the last 2 years, Todd, from January to March, we've seen the bean market rally a dollar. I think a lot of guys may have that in the back of their mind, but this is a different year, and I think, again, guys are wondering, can we get that kind of rally going? And up until people were started dying from bird flu, I think we had a reasonable chance to get things going. But this is a big lid on this market now, and I think we have to kind of look and take a different perspective on beans and say, I'd rather probably cash my beans in, and again, there are very cheap options out there if you want to buy beans back.
So how much, when you say cash them in, how much are you looking at selling? The rest of the crop that you have on hand?
I think guys can, again, replace them for 10 cents. You can buy a 580 Jan call and be in pretty good shape if something changes and comes around. So right now, I think we're going to watch this. If we take out the support area, I think there's little hope of seeing things come back around unless we can really see some great exports or something changes as far as, again, confirming bird flu is out of the picture.
Chuck, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, joining us from the West Lafayette office in Indiana. Somebody from that office, usually Mike Zuzulo, joins us on Friday afternoons here on the Closing Market Report.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, Steve Hilberg, our own AM 580 chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. Forecast for the two-state region this evening in northwestern and west central Illinois. We'll have mostly clear skies, lows ranging from 25 in northeastern Indiana to 32 in west central Illinois. In northwestern and west central Illinois, sunny early tomorrow, then increasing cloudiness. Ed says tomorrow, mostly sunny elsewhere. Highs will range tomorrow from 43 in far northwestern Illinois to 57 in the south. Now today's agricultural news. An assessment by the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, says USDA's risk management agency does not do enough to prevent and detect fraud in the federal crop insurance programs. The GAO says the Farm Service Agency between 2001 and 2004 has conducted just 64% of the inspections requested by the RMA, and that RMA's data analysis of the largest farming operations is incomplete. Well, senators who support of mandatory country of origin labeling for meat say they plan to attach a measure to any bill, whenever it is germane, that would repeal language in the appropriations bill and move up implementation of mandatory cool by 2 years to begin next October. A provision in this year's appropriations bill delays mandatory cool till September the 30th of 2008. Senators in support of mandatory cool are also proposing that USDA take its logo off certain cuts of imported meat, a move that could make the market more favorable for some U.S. ranchers. And legislators from farm states are unhappy that a provision that would have boosted the potential for agricultural trade with Cuba was dropped by this year's appropriations bill for transportation, treasury, and housing. The White House had threatened to veto the bill if the Cuban trade section was not removed. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development has released a review of China's agricultural policies and practices. The report concluded that Chinese farmers depend on government support for about 6% of their income, a figure which is far less than most developed countries. For example, OECD's estimate for Japan for 2003, the most recent available, was 58%, for Korea, 60%, and for the U.S., 18%. Canadian farmers, by the way, are subsidized to the tune of 21%. Iowa Senator Tom Harkin is calling for an examination by the GAO of USDA's plans for a national animal identification system. Harkin says after introducing the idea for a national ID system 2 years ago, USDA has yet to inform producers and state governments how much it will cost to implement the system. Harkin says a GAO report would give insight into how the Ag Department is developing the National Animal ID System. The Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, nations are joining the U.S. in its call for an end to export subsidies. Top trade ministers from the APEC nations would like to see subsidies eliminated by the year 2010 and are looking to countries for increased market access for ag goods. U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman says this week's meeting of APEC marked the first time Asian countries had come together in a united front on an export subsidy program. President Bush has nominated Richard Crowder for the nation's top spot as chief ag negotiator. Crowder currently serves as president and chief executive officer for the American Seed Trade Association. But for 3 years, from 1989 to 1992, Crowder served as Undersecretary for International Affairs and Commodity Programs at USDA. Most U.S. farm and commodity groups have expressed approval with Crowder's nomination. And finally, you might end up spending a little extra dough on your Thanksgiving feast this year. That's according to the American Farm Bureau Federation's 20th annual informal survey of the price for a traditional Thanksgiving dinner. This year's survey shows an increase of $1.10 from last year's survey of the total cost of a basic Turkey Day item set. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, farmers in the state of Illinois have a series of meetings they can attend in December. We'll hear about the return of the Farm Income Series Roadshow and how beef producers can catch up on the latest production information, too. Winter is the time farmers go to meetings. They go to breakfast meetings, dinner meetings, and even supper meetings. For the uninitiated, the only time farmers eat lunch is if it's cold cuts and they're being served at noon. Otherwise, it's dinner. With that little lesson out of the way, it's time for some other lessons. The University of Illinois winter meeting season rally picks up with a heifer auction in southern Illinois. Justin Sexton is livestock specialist at the Mount Vernon Extension Office, and he helps organize the event.
December 2nd, we're going to have a heifer sale. It's the Illinois Heifer Development Program. It's the heifer development program that we have that we encourage all beef producers to utilize to bring replacement heifers into their beef herd. At 6:30 at Greenville, we're going to have 72 heifers that will showcase 13 consigners across the southern part of the state. These heifers are bred to calve anywhere from the 1st of January to the end of May.
The 72 animals for auction have been vaccinated, documented, and bred to an ease of calving bull. The goal of the program is to improve the genetic makeup of the cowherds across the state. The Illinois Heifer Development Program auction is scheduled for 6:30 in Greenville, December the 2nd. On December the 1st, there's a different beef cattle meeting in southern Illinois. It's at Goreville. Southern Illinois native Monty Curry will present. He now works for University of Missouri. The topics of the evening will be minerals and nutrition and how to use byproducts from ethanol plants in a beef cow operation.
Yes, he's going to talk about all of the corn co-products, that being distillers, grains, and gluten feed, as well as soy hulls, and how they match up with the nutritional requirements of the cow.
Both of the beef programs start at 6:30. Pre-registration is available for the December 1 meeting in Goreville. Call the Jackson County, Illinois, Extension Office. For the grain farmers in the state and the livestock producers, too, the annual Farm Income Series put on by the Ag Economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I will hit the road December the 8th. You can pre-register online at the Farm Doc website. The address is www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. There are five regional Farm Income 2006 meetings. The December 8 meeting is in Springfield. It's followed by a meeting on the 13th in Rochelle, the 14th in Moline, the 16th in Urbana, and December the 20th in Mount Vernon. The Farm Income 2006 series will feature content on calculating production costs for both grain and livestock farms, taking advantage of online tools available from the U of I, how to prepare a cash flow budget, and some interesting work co-authored by Daryl Good on the relevance of technical trading to the commodity markets. Again, pre-registration for the Farm Income 2006 series is available online at the Farm Doc website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Taking a look at some of the cash prices around the nation for corn. These are yesterday's cash prices, of course. Central Illinois, $1.76 yesterday. In Memphis, corn traded at $2.06. Omaha at $1.67. And Toledo at $1.62. The soybeans in Central Illinois yesterday at $5.59 a bushel. Memphis at $5.93. Omaha $5.59. And Toledo at $5.47. Joining us now to take a look at today's cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
And tell me about the marketplace in your area and how the basis has held up. I'm always interested, of course, in going both directions to the river and to Decatur from Williamsville.
Activity-wise, this week for us has been very quiet. Markets haven't really done anything positive through the course of the week. We've had a few calls, but absolutely no cash selling into it. Basis, we've seen an improvement since last week on corn from between 1 and 5 cents to the processor markets. The river markets are up 4 cents, but from where I'm sitting, they're still 10 behind the processor. On the bean side, no change in processor numbers. The river has improved by 8 cents a bushel on the nearby, but there's similar to corn, still 8 and a half cents behind the processor.
How long do you think that basis can continue to be good or stay strong in the face of futures that are making new contract lows in the corn and certainly trading sharply lower in the beans over time?
I think we will continue to see strong and or improving basis numbers until we see some cash movement. Right now we're trying to feed, you know, especially the processor pipeline, the feeder pipeline, with hedged inventories and moving that. And as we eat into those, it becomes, you know, less and less of it out there. Now we made our initial flattening of the basis and levels coming up with nothing happening. Now it's getting to levels where you're seeing some elevator inventories move, but that is to fill the gap until the producer sells something.
And will they wait another dime?
I think right now it's more of a factor of time. The numbers are not real good out here. We're getting new contract lows. You know, flat prices in corn have appreciated, 8 to 12 cents maybe from harvest lows, but that's it. And, you know, you're at or under what storage minimums are, and that sure is not generating any cash interest. I think it's more of a factor of time, getting to where either some bills are due or get past the first of the year.
And your bids for the day are?
We are at 174 on corn nearby and 547 on beans.
Thanks much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Friday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Steve Hilberg. Your local newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Officials in Savoy say the village board might vote as soon as next month on forming their own mass transit district for the southern portion of town. Village Board Member Joan Dykstra says the Champaign-Urbana MTD is forcing the issue by promoting legislation that would give regional planning commissions the decision-making powers when new MTDs are proposed near an existing one. CUMTD Managing Director Bill Volk says the legislation would avoid costly legal disputes. An Urbana man who pleaded guilty to stabbing his father to death earlier this year has been sentenced to 45 years in prison. 20-year-old Paul McLaughlin admitted killing 45-year-old Peter McLaughlin, who worked as a police officer at Parkland College in Champaign. Investigators still haven't been able to pinpoint the cause of death for an Illinois State University student whose body was found last month in a burned-out Mississippi chicken house. Normal Police Lieutenant Mark Cotty today said a second autopsy was inconclusive, and he says investigators will now seek further forensic tests in an effort to determine how 21-year-old Olamide Adeyoye died. Glenn Pichard has been picked to serve as president of Southern Illinois University. He says he hopes to spend the rest of his career at the university. Pichard was introduced today as the successor to current SIU president James Walker, who plans to retire. Indiana state officials expect that once all the checks are cashed, their state will have collected more than $200 million in a two-month tax amnesty program. The preliminary tally today, 3 days after the end of the program, is $197.7 million. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's been very cold and colder than usual for November. Of course, it's been a lot warmer than usual for November as well.
Yeah, we've had both October and November have sort of exhibited this Jekyll Hyde personality when it's been coming to temperature. We did October. We started out very warm, ended very cold, and it flipped back to a warm start to November. And then the last few days here have been exceptionally cold, much colder than normal. But for the month so far, up through the first 17 days or so of November, temperatures for Illinois and surrounding states are generally a little bit above average. But, of course, the last couple of days have helped knock it down. And it looks like we're going to stay at or a little below normal here for the next week to 10 days.
And the rainfall that has come in the last couple of weeks, has it made it far north to start to alleviate any dry conditions there?
Yeah, they did. The last rain we had, which was really the good one, was Monday night into early Tuesday as a warm front came up through Illinois, really laid down some good rainfall. In fact, in some areas, too much. Down in southern Illinois, there were many locations that had 5 to 6 inches of rain. Carbondale had almost 7.5 in just a two-day period. So it'd be nice if we could redistribute that a bit. But southern Illinois got drenched. Central and northern Illinois did get pretty significant rain, anywhere from a third to an inch and a half, an inch and a quarter. But not every location got the rain, and the real driest areas of Illinois and what's been in the severe drought area didn't get as much as we would have liked to have seen. They probably had on the low end of the rainfall in this system, maybe a third to three quarters of an inch. We need some regular and normal to above normal rainfall for the next couple months to knock the feet out from under that drought up there.
And that usually comes or not?
We can if we have a very active winter. Normally, precipitation in the winter is that's the lowest amounts we get during the year. But on the other hand, most of it either goes into the ground or runs off because nothing's growing and the plants aren't using it. So what goes into the ground generally stays into the ground until growing season. So what we don't want is another January like last year. We'd like to distribute that a little bit better. But we can recover. It's not, it's very possible we'll recover before spring.
And for the coming week, what kind of conditions can we look at?
It looks like it's going to be generally cool. Temperatures near to a little bit below normal. Looks like a couple of clipper systems will be plunging through the Great Lakes, and each one of those will bring a little reinforcing mass of cold air to Illinois, and so you may see a brief warm-up and then a cool-down for the next day and then a warm-up for the next day. So right now, look for highs generally in the 40s and lows in the 20s and 30s.
We appreciate it.
All right, Todd.
Thanks much. Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign County. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Our guest this week, Sue Martin of Webster City, Iowa. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 2:37 Central Time, 44 degrees in Urbana. Let's check in once again this Friday afternoon with Scott Moe of A.G. Edwards in Champaign. Scott, what's the latest on Wall Street?
Stocks are a little changed after giving back much of their earlier gains. Action has been a bit disappointing following yesterday's broad-based advance. Trading remains choppy on this option expiration Friday. Crude oil futures continued yesterday's pullback, falling below $56 a barrel in New York today. Currently, New York advance declined to 17 to 12 positive on issues and 8 to 5 positive on volume. The Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,745. That's up 25 points on volume of just over 1.5 billion shares trading hands so far today. Transports are at 41.32. That's up 49. Utilities are off to at 394, and the NASDAQ's up 4 at 22.24. Currently, we have 1,747 advancing issues, 1,477 declining, with 164 issues unchanged on the day. On the interest rate front, the December bonds at 117 and 15/32. That's down 17/32 on the day. Brings the long bond yield to a 4.69. Oil's off 20 cents a barrel at $56.14, and the London African Gold Fix is at $485.85 an ounce. That's down 30 cents. Once again, the Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,745. It's up 25 points on the day. This is Scott Moe with H. Edwards in Champaign. Have a good afternoon.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by Eastern Rug Gallery, offering a wide selection of guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs of every size and color combination, from new to antique, to complement any decor. Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign.
Leave a piece of cake within your dog's reach, and it's a safe bet that your pooch will gobble it up. Leave a piece of cake within your cat's reach, and your cat may knock the cake around for kicks, but Kitty isn't going to devour the cake. Cats are finicky eaters, sure. But did I mention that this is one heck of a good piece of cake? What's the cat's problem? It appears that cats can't taste sweetness and therefore aren't attracted to it. A gene that plays a vital role in the creation of sweet receptors on the tongues of other mammals is defective in both domestic and big cats. The defective gene does not produce a protein that is crucial to the production of sweet receptors. Because the gene presumably once produced this protein, but doesn't any longer, It's akin to a molecular fossil. The name for such a gene is pseudogene. It's similar to genes involved in eye development in blind cavefish and limb development in whales, as well as vestigial traits in other organisms. The discovery of this pseudogene now has scientists wondering what came first, the loss of sweet receptors or carnivorous behavior. It could be that the loss of the ability to taste sweetness drove cats to eating nothing but meat, or it could be that as cats became carnivorous, they eventually lost the unused sweet receptors. Either way, you can rest assured that you can leave a smorgasbord of sweets on the kitchen counter and your cat won't beat you to them, except to play soccer with them, maybe. This moment of science comes from Indiana University, with underwriting from the Office of the Chancellor. Today's program was prepared by Michelle Ross, with help